This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, looking at descriptions, Simon, that you say seem to be very consistent over the decades, is there a specific type of information that is better retained in writing these up?
I think one of the things I find most peculiar is it's the thing that you wouldn't really expect to be consistent, which is often consistent, and that is stories. So in other words, someone will have an experience with a fairy, and the experience will be incredibly similar. Can I give you one example here, just to give you a flavor of what I mean?
Sure.
So an example that you may have come across, which is called being pixie-led. Pixie is a type of fairy. And this is what I refer to as fairy disorientation. Typically, someone is out at night and they see a light and they are walking down a road and perhaps they get turned off the road by the light, or they focus on the light and they find themselves in the middle of a place they don't know. They have been misled. And at a certain point in trying to follow the light or trying to get back to the road, they fall in a marsh or in the water or in a pond. There's this element of getting soaked. And at this point, they hear laughing and clapping. So there's this idea that the little fairies are there cheering. This is their rather cruel victory, though it has to be said no one dies, it's just a question of getting a dunking. And so there you have this experience where this story is told again and again. Now, of course, it's normal that stories, particularly good stories, survive. There's a survival of the fittest in storytelling. We get rid of bad stories and we keep the ones that we like. But what seems to happen is that people begin to equate their experiences with that story. And to some extent, people seem to actually start to live the story. And you get this not just in areas of the supernatural, but also in urban legends sometimes, where some people almost seem to fall into the story. They seem to take part in the story. And I'm sure that you could do the same with UFO lore. And in fact, that is a book I would love to read. In other words, an attempt to get very similar experiences and the way that people have unusually identical experiences.
You know, it's funny because that very same story I ran across just a couple of years ago, and it was reported in several mainstream media of a woman during the lockdown for COVID. She had gone out for a walk in an area that she was intimately familiar with. It was wooded, but not far from her home. But she said at one point she became disoriented and began to feel like that her surroundings weren't familiar with her. And then she heard somebody, she said it was a female voice, laughing at her from the nearby woods. And she said that she remembered a story that her grandmother used to tell her. So she took her jacket off and turned it inside out and wore it. And she said almost immediately the surroundings became familiar to her again and she was able to go home. That sounds almost exactly like what you just described.
Yeah, I think I know that story. I think I could be wrong, but I think it was a story from Ireland. There was a woman and it was widely reported in the media. She'd had this experience in the wild, or maybe there was another one. I mean, they are relatively common. And the reference you've made there to the idea of turning your coat inside out, or sometimes turning the pocket inside out, or in some extreme cases, actually stripping off your clothes completely. This is supposed to break the spell. And many people have reported success with this. So if any of you ever find yourself hopelessly lost in an area that should be known, you now know what to do, I hope.
But once again, how brilliant is it, though, that here we are in the 21st century, yet these same kind of stories keep reoccurring, and oftentimes in a intellectual vacuum with people.
Right. I'd like to move things on a little bit, but just on that subject, because this is an area I find fascinating. Being pixie-led is an example of a story that has to some extent survived. I think if you ask 10,000 modern British people, maybe even 15, 20% of people would know what you were talking about. So to some extent, this story has survived. But there are lots of other of these older fairy stories that have disappeared. I guess one thing I find fascinating is when one of these old stories from the past reappears, yeah, and you think there's no realistic way that these people who've had this experience can know about this older story. Well, the other thing that happens is when new stories emerge. And I can give you examples from both categories, but perhaps I'll give you a couple of examples of new stories emerging, because it's something I've been looking at a lot recently. In the fairy census, there are two separate accounts from grown children, in other words, adults remembering childhood experiences, remembering a hot air balloon full of, let's say, strange fairy-like people who are dressed in a very extravagant way, coming down, landing near them, and asking the child to go away with them. It's a really quite detailed, bizarre, also one of those unpigeonholable experiences, but we have two different accounts of that. Another account that I find fascinating, I've called the Wood Diva. And I think there were five different examples of this in the fairy census. We now have 1,000 experiences, so five of those relate to the Wood Diva. Two people, usually two women, are walking in a wood together, and they encounter a beautiful human-sized woman who comes towards them, and then there is some kind of slip or change. Maybe their attention is distracted, and the woman just disappears. And at this point, they come back. Now, there's nothing really in medieval or Renaissance fairy lore which is quite the same as that. And I almost have the sense that we collectively are creating here new stories. And these stories haven't been given names yet, apart from my very weak attempt. But I suspect in 15, 20 years, these will be recognized stories, the kind of stories we swap around.
Of course, nowadays, it's not that common, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Simon, this is your area of expertise, for people to talk about possible fairy encounters. It must be UFOs. It must be gray aliens, that sort of thing.
Okay, so let me jump in there and make a suggestion to you. And by all means, disagree, because I've been thinking about this recently, and I'm not sure if I'm right or not. I think that if I was to have a UFO experience tonight, I am primed. I know what a UFO experience involves, because I've watched all the movies, I've read some of the books. I've got it in my head. It's stable there. Now, it's true that I'm perhaps a little bit more interested in average than these things. But even, say, my wife, who has absolutely, well, very little interest in the supernatural, I think she would know what to expect from a UFO experience. Society has taught us. That's not the case with fairy experiences. We've seen things like Tinkerbell, we've seen films, we've read books, but they're not usually about human encounters with fairies in the same way. I don't think we are primed, and it makes fairy lore a fascinating field, because whereas 400 or 500 years ago, everyone in society knew what to expect from the fairies. They knew you shouldn't eat fairy food, you shouldn't dance with the fairies. There were lots of rules and ideas. Those have almost been blown away. And so when someone has a fairy experience, I think that in a sense, the supernatural gives them a lot more freedom as to the experience they would have. I don't know if you would go along with that, or have I offended the honor of UFOs here?
There is no way you can offend the honor of UFOs. But you make a good point there. And that is that we are primed to expect something with regard to UFOs. And that's what we see a lot of the time. Simon, Gene, Tim, you're in
the Pericast.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
Tehibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
In a sense, Simon, I'm saying that what we do see, whatever it is colored by the culture.
Absolutely. I mean, here I'm going to throw in an example from the UFO lore, and maybe it's an example that you guys have come across. I think it was in the 1970s, there was a study carried out in California, and it was a hospital in, I think, on the edge of Los Angeles. They got a number of university-level students together. These university students were basically hypnotized to have UFO experiences. But it was one of these fascinating experiments where everything was very much above board, in the sense that there was no trickery involved. The students were told that they would be asked a series of questions and that they should respond to these questions and, let's say, fantasize an experience. One of the things the researchers were fascinated by was the way that these experiences were just so similar. Now, I don't think they even went so far as to say perhaps there was some form of telepathy going on, that people who'd already had the experience were somehow in connection with those about to have the experience. My suspicion is these were university-level students who had watched quite a lot of Lost in Space and Star Trek, had been primed by the culture, as you've just said, and so had a kind of framework that they could tap into. And this is very important for supernatural experiences, that we need to be aware to what extent that framework is there in the culture.
Well, then it's a cultural phenomenon, certainly. I mean, back in the early 1950s, there was this movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. A British actor named Michael Rennie, not well known to American audiences, plays this alien Klaatu, a human, tall, thin, wearing a silvery uniform. Suddenly, UFO contact cases of that era involved entities or beings wearing silvery uniforms with a kind of a European Nordic look, very much inspired by this film. Now, maybe they were all making it up, and they used this as inspiration, but everything seemed to take a particular road. Then after it became common for people to see gray aliens in connection with UFOs and possibly to be abducted by UFOs, they would see different types of creatures, gray aliens being popular. A lot of that may have been because the cultural image was already there.
So I have lots and lots of sympathy with this approach. And just to give you an example that will probably seem a little bit ridiculous, maybe because it is, but at the moment I'm considering writing a book on 19th century mermaid sightings. So these are people in the 1800s who came across mermaids, and some very serious and earnest people who had this experience, which is difficult for us to make sense of. If I do go ahead and write that book, I will give entire chapters to the art of mermaids in the 19th century, theatrical presentations, mermaid tattoos, mermaids on tavern signs, mermaids in churches in stained glass windows. Because for me, you just cannot look efficiently at these experiences without appreciating the culture behind it. And I think that this is something that so far we have not been very good at doing.
So should mermaids all look like Daryl Hannah?
Ha! Well, certainly the more recent ones, let's say. One thing I'm interested in at the moment is one of the main places that people saw mermaids in the 19th century was actually in what used to be called freak shows, or used to be called, well, sometimes fairs as well. You've probably come across pictures of this, but in the 19th century, a series of ingenious fakers based out of Germany and Japan basically made small mermaids that they claimed were mermaid babies, and were a codfish with a monkey sewn onto the top. This is probably the most common way people saw these things, because so many people went to fairs and saw these on exhibit. Barnum in 1822 put on a famous show in New York where tens of thousands of people came to see a so-called genuine mermaid. And my suspicion is that when you get into the accounts, these kind of experiences will start to influence what people see. Now, this remains to be proved, but I am, let's say, moderately confident that that's how things will pan out. Let's see.
Well, that particular example is very gross, as far as I can see.
Where'd you get that written? I want to read that.
You know what it's like when you're very excited about something, and sometimes it turns into a book, and sometimes It just collapses. But I think that this principle that to understand the supernatural, you've got to look at the wider presentation in culture is a good one.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the fairy census. Now, I guess that your interest in this came from, this isn't the first fairy census. There were ones preceding you.
Right. So there were two writers in the 20th century who did something very similar to the fairy census. And I'll just share them with you because they may be of interest to your listeners. They're both in their own way fantastic writers. The first of these was a very eccentric American, Walter Evans Wentz, who did a doctorate in the 1900s, the first decade of the 20th century. And he basically went to Ireland, to the Isle of Man, to Cornwall, to Scotland, to Wales, and to Brittany in France. And he collected fairy accounts, and he published these fairy accounts in a marvellous book called The Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries. And this book you can find free online. It's now long out of copyright. And Evans Wentz's book is... it's about 700, 600 pages long, and 300 of these pages are just, for me anyway, delirium, as Walter Evans Wentz gives various theories as to what fairies may or may not be. But the first 300 pages are just, I mean, like a day at the sauna. They're just wonderful to read and relax your way through, because they're a series of maybe 200 fairy accounts, people who've had fairy experiences. And so that's a wonderful, wonderful collection. And then the second person who attempted something like this was a woman named Marjorie Johnson. Marjorie Johnson was born just about the time that Walter Evans Wentz was publishing his doctorate. So about the time of the Great War. And from very early on in her life, unlike Walter Evans Wentz, Marjorie Johnson saw fairies. She was a fairy seer, and she had constant, almost daily experiences. And what Marjorie Johnson did was that through the years, I think the way she dealt with this rather special gift she had in a society where fairies were widely ridiculed, she began to collect experiences of other people. And by the time she got to the 1950s, she'd got so confident at this that she would actually write to newspapers and ask to be published in their letter pages and demand that people who'd had experiences write to her.
Let us learn about that. Those demands, more with Simon, Jean, Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
News update. Shake, rattle, and roll. Aftershocks still being felt after that rare 4.8 magnitude earthquake hitting the Northeast. The epicenter in the town of Lebanon, New Jersey, that's about 50 miles away from New York City. For a period of time on Friday, ground stops at the New York area airports, including Newark, New Jersey, LaGuardia, and JFK, as runways were inspected for cracks. Dave Collins has more.
The U.S. Geological Survey confirms a 4.8 magnitude earthquake occurred Social media posts started popping up from folks feeling the shake from New York City to Long Island, upstate New York, New Jersey, and Philadelphia.
Turning now to sports, the Final Four semifinal games tonight in Glendale, Arizona. First up, the game between Purdue and NC State at 6:09 Eastern, and then number one UConn and number four Alabama play at 8:49 p.m. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutriMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutriMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com. NutriMedical.com for the whole family.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Strong-minded devil there, Simon, demands that people write letters.
She was a very soft woman, but she had hard edges, and she felt very, very strongly about fairies. And so she gathered in these various fairy reports, and unfortunately, she lived till she was 102, but unfortunately, she didn't manage to publish in English her collection in her lifetime. The honor fell to me a couple of years after Marjorie's death to publish her work, get it edited, to publish it with Anomalist, the Anomalist publishing house. And there are about 400 experiences that date from, let's say, the 20s through to the 1990s. So if you take Marjorie Johnson and Walter Evans Wentz together, they're very different books, but you have something like 600 fairy experiences there. And I think the thing that they had in common is both of these individuals believe passionately in fairies. Walter Evans Wentz didn't have fairy experiences, but he took on trust the experience of others. And for Marjorie Johnson, as I say, it was almost a daily experience. And so with the fairy census, I'd wanted to build on this. But I think the difference was I was much more pessimistic than Evans Wentz or Marjorie Johnson about proving the existence of fairies. It's something that lies beyond proof, as with much of the supernatural. And so what I wanted to do with the fairy census was study the kind of people who have experiences and ask under what kind of circumstances. That was the aim when I set out in 2014, 2015.
And what, especially with Marjorie, how do you think that she would have viewed the results that you published in the first fairy census? And there's been two now, Robin.
That's right. So there have been two, both with 500, so we're now at 1,000, and the aim is to get to 2,000, so there'll be at least two more in the next decade or two decades. What would Marjorie Johnson have said? I have a picture here, just some yards. I'm going to turn around and look at Marjorie. I keep this up on my wall, and it was sent to me by one of her friends when the book was published. I think that Marjorie Johnson would have found me a very frustrating person because I'm not necessarily a fairy believer. I'm fascinated, absolutely fascinated in the phenomenon, but I am somewhat skeptical about lots of these things. I try and keep an open mind, and she would have probably said that my mind is too open. And like I said, she was a woman with hard edges. And I think that she would have been rather impatient with some of me asking about questions like the one you alluded to earlier. Why was this a fairy experience? How long did it last? Trying to be empirical about things that she would have felt were not empirical. For her, the real message that we have to get through is that fairies exist. And there, I think, she would have shook her head with disappointment at me, whereas still being, I think she still would have read and been interested in the fairy censuses.
Well, she had a point, though. I mean, if she was having fairy experiences almost every day, then I'm sure that she had some pretty definitive ideas on what she was dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. But sometimes these experiences can lock us in, and I'll just give you an idea of this when Marjorie Johnson expressed regret. You've both heard, I'm sure, of the Cottingley photographs.
Oh, yes.
These were the famous photographs taken in 1917 and 1920 and then published two young girls, actually one of them not so young, from Yorkshire in England. And they claimed to show these two young girls, one a young woman, one a girl, with various members of the fairy kingdom. And these were ingenious fakes. The two who appeared on the photograph confessed to this. In the, when are we, the 1990s or even at the end of the 80s, it started to come out. And Marjorie Johnson had defended for decades and decades these photographs as being genuine. And so in the end, she had to climb down and admit she'd been wrong about this. But you're right. If you have these experiences every day, then I'm sure it gives you a level of certainty that personally I don't experience, but I can see why she would act and why she was impatient in some circumstances. I'll tell you one story that I think captures her very well. She had a guiding fairy who she felt looked after her. And she, after decades of seeing fairies, asked permission from this guiding fairy to talk about her own fairy experiences and to collect other fairy experiences. And Marjorie said that this fairy went away and had a kind of a conference with the other fairies, came back and said, okay, you can do this, and we will give you a special gift. That when you are walking down the street, if you meet someone who has had a fairy experience, you will see that they have a rainbow aura. And Marjorie Johnson took this as an inspiration that whenever she saw someone with this rainbow aura, she would just walk up to them and start a conversation. Obviously, I never witnessed this, but I have this beautiful image of Marjorie Johnson at the bus stop suddenly starting an earnest conversation with some poor guy whose car's broken down and waiting to catch the bus because he has a rainbow aura. So she was someone who had very strong views, but also achieved an incredible amount in terms of our evidence for understanding these things. I think whatever your point of view, we can all be very grateful for Marjorie's work and her achievement.
Now, our listeners know that we have not talked about auras very much in a number of years. So just let's take a brief sidestep there. What can you tell us about one's aura?
Well, there is this idea that some people are sensitive enough that when they meet others, they can see a kind of a luminous shading around the person, and that some people interpret auras in terms of colors. In other words, I see that you have a green aura, I see that, you know, Tim has a red aura, etc., etc. This isn't an experience I've had, but I've met various people who do have this experience, and it's supposed to relate to the sensibility, your almost telepathic ability in reading others' personality.
Yeah, we do know, Gene, that people do have auras with various kinds of light imaging devices, you know, the infrared and things like that. But I don't know about the study to use auras almost as a personality indicator or spiritual indicator. Even though I had somebody tell me one time that I had a blue aura, by the way. was Marjorie influenced any by, because some of her writing, you know, it makes me think that she may have had influence from, you know, either spiritualism or maybe theosophy.
Yeah, absolutely. So theosophy is this intellectual, spiritual movement that begins in the late 19th century. It's many of your listeners will have heard of Helen Blavatsky, and it had a number of really quite strict views about the world and a spiritual hierarchy within the world. And Marjorie Johnson was a signed up theosophist. Her reading is very clear on this, and the circles that she moved in were often theosophist based.
Let's do this break now and explain more of this on the other side. And I do want to remind listeners that our guest will return for the After the Paracast bonus podcast. That's part of the Paracast Plus. So if you haven't signed up yet, check the Paracast Plus, theparacast.plus. Dr. Simon Young, Gene Steinberg, he is not a doctor. Tim Swartz, nor is he. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, until one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. Call right now. Help is standing by. 800-296-1327.
It's easy to see. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. We all know something big is coming. And that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming more self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, and they make it easy for you to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, heirloom seeds for your garden, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items will ship that same day. Time is short. Prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are things many of us take for granted. But for many adults with disabilities who are elderly or have serious medical issues, dental care is simply unaffordable. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. DLN is asking dentists and their teams to volunteer to just see one of the many patients in need. You can literally change a life. When you volunteer with DLN's donated dental services program to see one, you treat a pre-qualified patient in your office at your convenience. We handle the details so you can focus on the care. Lack of dental care can lead to the inability to have life-saving surgery, eat, or contribute to our community. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message. Will you see one? Visit willyouseeone.org to help change one life in your community today.
This is Tracy Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Quick question, Simon Young. What is your doctorate in again? This is history or something?
Yeah, history or something. It's, I think actually technically, it's not in history, it's in medieval Latin. It was a series of texts looking at Irish travelers on the continent in the early Middle Ages. There were no auras with Irish travellers on the continent in the early Middle Ages, I can tell you that. It was much flatter than what I study now.
Well, going back to Marjorie and theosophy, one of the reasons I asked that question is because when she asked permission to write about her own stories and others, her guardian fairy had to go to a hierarchy to ask permission for that, and that just kind of reminded me of some of the beliefs along those lines. But has that then led to a different interpretation or look on the concept of fairies as opposed to the British Isles 300 years ago? And I'm thinking along the lines of, what am I thinking along the lines here? Elementals, the idea that fairies are nature spirits, elementals, as opposed to earlier beliefs.
Yeah, absolutely. You're spot on. You've identified it. And this, what theosophy gives us in terms of fairies is it gives fairies a place within creation. It says, okay, look, yeah, there are these people who are talking about fairies, and shock horror, they're actually right. There are these fairies that exist, and you use the correct theosophic word, they're elementals. They can relate to fire, they can relate to water, they can relate to earth, or they can relate to the air. And they have a place within the natural order. And for example, Marjorie Johnson is a good theosophist, would say that fairies are, for instance, what make the roses in your garden grow. So plants have their own fairies. They're part of this natural mechanic. Now, for us today, this is just absolutely normal. If you take your kids or grandkids to go and watch any film about fairies, this is what fairies will do. They'll teach little fish to swim. They'll put dewdrops on roses. They're basically what makes the natural world work. And this is an idea that is not there, as you anticipate, in earlier records. At best, we have this notion that fairies are somewhat connected with fertility. In other words, for instance, if there's a war between the fairy kingdoms, then there might be a famine in the human realm. But there is none of this idea that a rosebush has its special fairies. This is something that's completely modern and completely theosophic. So this is another example with fairy wings, fairy size, of the idea of what fairies are evolving.
And I think that there's a agrarian community. Where is that, in Scotland or Ireland, that started in the 60s, that was their whole idea?
You're thinking of the Findhorn community.
That's it. That's the one. Yeah. That's the one.
And so this was a, let's say, I'm a little bit anxious about saying a theosophic community, but it definitely took elements of theosophy in its ideas. And they dedicated this to just trying to grow different plants. And they had the most extraordinary results on very unpromising land. And so this became a kind of a sanctuary for people who believed in some of these elementals or that kind of an interpretation of fairies.
So with your own fairy senses, how did you set about, first of all, how did you put the questions together to go with this? I'll go on from there.
Right. So there were lots of questions. I think there were about 40. And I do hope that some of your listeners will, if they have the right kind of experience, have a go with the fairy census and send in a report. I'd be very grateful. But I should warn you that it's something, it doesn't take 2 minutes. It takes at least 6 or 7 minutes to go through all the many questions. And I took a lot of time going through these questions because I was painfully aware that if this was a long-term project, I wouldn't be able to get 500 in and then change the base questions. Because for the purposes of comparability, the questions had to remain the same. And so I tested it with various people. But again, my focus was, can we make deductions about the kind of people that see fairies and under what conditions? And I think those two questions give you an idea of what kind of questions are asked. Now, for 90% of people reading the fairy census, what interests them is the raw experience itself. But there are people who will look at this stuff, and then we'll say, well, how old was this person? Or had they taken drugs or alcohol that evening? And this extra data I have there in the files, and so you can easily check that.
And how did you get it out there that you had this questionnaire for people? Because I get to see most people, like, if they happen to just run across it while Googling or something, then they'd be like, fairy census? What?
Well, I did it with two different methods. So this is in the mid-2010s. I contacted the media, particularly in the UK, and then I used social media. And for me, it was a bit of a life lesson, and maybe it's a life lesson that you two have been through to as well. But social media was four times as useful as the conventional media. And so there were a couple of exceptions. I remember doing a piece for 14 Times. I did a piece for New Zealand's National Radio. There were some little outings in more conventional media that got lots of responses. But generally speaking, it was social media. It was people passing this stuff on. And like you say, often doing so, you know, with a laugh, saying, oh, I'm going to send this to my friend group because it's such a joke. But you didn't know that Johnny in your friend group, when he was 12, actually woke up at 11 and saw a fairy dancing on his sideboard. And so I think this element of ridicule actually was a good thing, if anything. It got the word out, I mean.
And was the census for everybody or restricted to a certain area?
No, it was absolutely for everybody, though the results show that not everyone did answer. Overwhelmingly, I think the numbers are something like 85% of those who replied came from, let's call it the Anglophone world, the English-speaking world. So New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the US, Britain and Ireland. And then you do get odd answers from France, Russia, South America. There are quite a few. But I think for purposes of studies, if someone really wanted to get down with the data, in as much as it's exciting because it gives you a kind of a helicopter view of fairy belief in the English-speaking world.
Is there any way to look at these reports and say, well, these people are just trying to get attention? They're making it all up. They're taking existing fairy lore and adapting it.
Absolutely. There's no question that there is some of that going on. And I think that perhaps worryingly for someone who wants to do this survey and use it empirically, is that some people are probably quite unconscious that they're doing this. I mean, some of the experiences are very slight in a way, but my logic was that I wanted anyone possible who felt that they had a fairy experience. For me, that was the discriminating point. Do you feel that you've had a fairy experience? That if you're in that category, then you're welcome to write in. And I wanted it warts and all, so I wanted experiences that perhaps some people would find, for one reason or another, a little bit strange, or experiences that perhaps some people would find really quite convincing, at least the way it was set out, so they could be taken together. The experiences that I found most difficult to deal with, there were very, very few of these. I would say that in about perhaps 1,000, there were 2, maybe 3, maybe even 4, where I felt that someone who had written in was mentally ill.
Let's break it here, Simon, and we'll continue the Fairy Census with Gene, Simon, Tim. You're in.
Oh, the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you love reading about the mysteries of the universe? Do you wonder what secrets are hidden in the shadows of our own planet? If so, you won't want to miss these two amazing books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll explore the world of the mimics of man, beings that can look like us but are not. They've been among us since the beginning of history, hiding in plain sight, influencing our culture in ways we can scarcely imagine. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll discover the so-called hard evidence of UFOs that's been available for study this entire time, but for the most part has been ignored. These two books will open your eyes to a hidden reality that has been right in front of our eyes all along. That's Mimics, The Others Among Us, and Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. Available now on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product
I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never not once been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.